Chapter 3. An Object Badly Out of Place. Outside, the nip in the air was almost enough to make me change my mind and turn back. Although there had been some rain in the morning, the rest of the day had been sunny and bright. Fall was coming on strong, and the wet dew on the stoop felt as cold as hoarfrost to my bare feet. I was surprised my breath wasn't coming out white. Hugging my arms to my chest, I set off jogging in the direction of the security office. I glanced up yearningly at my window as I passed beneath it. Lights off, shade drawn. It looked like I was having a good night's sleep. Southfield was practically deserted. Looking across at Hartley and Wallach and John Jay dormitories, only a sprinkling of rooms had any lights on. Those that did had their shades drawn so that each cast an orange jack-o'-lantern glow out into the quad. The overall effect was equivalent to peeking into the back of an old-time radio at vacuum tubes glowing in the dark. As I passed along the front of journalism and then turned its corner, the herringbone red-brick sidewalk abruptly gave way to hexagonal gray cobblestones, no less freezing to the soles of my feet. There were shallow puddles left over from the earlier rain, and here and there solitary shoe trails passing through them without altering course. For me, however, the sharp sting to my feet made it worth my while to detour around. I crossed over College Walk, technically an actual city street, 116th Street, but closed off at either end by imposing wrought iron gates that kept out the city traffic. During gala functions, expensive cars and limousines could often be seen parked along it. Right at this moment, it was empty. I ascended the terraced plaza in front of Lowe Memorial Library. Lowe had been the first building constructed on the new campus when the school relocated itself from the southern tip of Manhattan, where it had formerly been known as King's College, to another spot about 5 miles shy of the northern tip, an area that in 1895 was largely undeveloped. Lowe Memorial Library emerged out of the crop fields to become the campus centerpiece. As a building, the general look was almost as if a national monument had wandered up from Washington, D.C., and squatted down on Morningside Heights. Architecturally, it was a platypus, part Parthenon, part Jefferson Memorial. As an iconic centerpiece, it was a resounding success. As a library, however, it was a total failure, the primary reason being there was practically no room in it for any books. Plenty of vaulted ceiling space and fancy rotunda, yes, but in terms of space for actual books, it was sorely lacking. The defect was remedied in 1934 with the construction of the much larger Nicholas Murray Butler Library, which it looked across to on the opposite side of South Field. Except for a few specialized collections, Lowe Library was a library in name only. Instead, it served numerous other functions, mostly administrative, such as housing the office of the president, as well as around back, serving as the central location for campus security. Before I angled off to pass along the west side of the building, I took a quick glance back over my shoulder, looking south in the direction of downtown Manhattan. A cloud mass overhead was reflecting back a great deal of the city's illumination, suggesting a fire out of control somewhere or the lights left on in 100 outdoor theaters. Shakespeare's maxim that all the world's a stage was particularly apropos when it came to New York City. Concurrent with the lateness of the hour, the general low-volume white noise hum of the hive was virtually the only sound noticeable, the exception being a high jet passing overhead that sounded like tearing fabric. While continuing to skirt around and avoid puddles, I allowed my mouth to hang open so my teeth wouldn't chatter. I couldn't be sure, but it did seem like, beneath the milky glow from the globes of the passing lamps, my breath was coming out white. Still, there was no sign of ice forming on the puddles, and I mused that it must still be too early in the calendar for this to technically be considered Indian summer. Running along with me, in parallel on my right, was a 6-foot-high wooden snow fence pressed up firmly against a 7-foot-high hedgerow. Its function was to cordon off a strip of manicured lawn on the other side. The patch of grass was lit by overhead floodlights extending out and aiming down from the roof of the library. It had the inviting effect of showing off the emerald greenness of the lawn below. The invitation was for appearance sake only, as the slatted fence and the tall hedgerow effectively put the area out of bounds, a necessary stratagem for an urban campus where keep-off-the-grass signs were routinely ignored. As I looked to my right through the hedgerow, the scene on the other side presented a flickering image, somewhat like trying to watch a silent movie while waving your fingertips up close to your face. Suddenly interposed into this frame of reference was an object badly out of place.